And I'm the Director of Architecture at Layer 7 Technologies. Now, we're a startup based in Vancouver in Canada. It's really focused on web services security. And part of our real focus is this idea of what we call declarative security or runtime security, where we actually take security out of the hands of programmers and put it in the hands of a dedicated security administrator who can then overlay it on a transaction as it takes place. That way it can be managed live at runtime, and security models can change in response to some kind of business process. So enough about that. I'll talk a little about our technology at the very end of this. But the bulk of this talk is actually going to be about federation and what the issues are in web services federation, how that ties into current identity models, and what's really different about federation in web services as opposed to, say, the conventional web. Now, to give you a bit of background on myself, I'm an old IBMer, as is our CTO, Dr. Tufik Cruzes, and Tufik's actually one of the pioneers in web services. I myself have actually been doing web services for a number of years, even before those technologies came out, mainly focusing on doing document exchange, XML document exchange, over message-oriented middleware systems. I've done a lot of writing in my career. I was a co-author of the Web Services Unleashed books from SAMS and professional JMS as well as a lot of other articles in scientific journals and competing trade journals and that. The current thing that I'm working on right now is I'm actually a co-editor of the Basic Security Profile, which is under the WSI. The WSI is an interoperability organization. The idea being that what we want to do is to look at a lot of the emerging standards in web services technologies and clarify them, essentially go through, find ambiguities, find places where standards need to be tightened up a bit to make very, very specific statements so that all of the different vendors in the web services space, including Layer 7, can essentially write to that so that we can get good interoperability between all of our different systems. I spend a lot of time actually talking on all of these topics. I'm one of these people who's been in technology for a long time and still is quite passionate about the whole area. Okay, here's what we're going to do. Let's first of all quickly go through the agenda. And really what we'll start out with is the whole idea of identity and distributed computing. This is something we know about a lot. I mean, probably every one of us signed on to our computer terminals this morning using some kind of mechanism, be it username, password, or biometrics, or key fobs, or something like that. So something we're intimately familiar with, but when you start to think about identity in the context of web services, there's a lot of very interesting challenges that come up. We'll go from there into federation and really talk about why federation is unusual. What's different about federation and web services as opposed to, say, I know a lot of people out there are probably doing web browser-based federation right now. A hot topic is actually something that's generating a tremendous amount of interest all over. Well, web services federation is similar. It has some very, very special challenges, and that's going to be a major theme of the whole talk. I'll then move into the standards landscape, talk about what's happening to the standards we're building, what's coming out, what's been out for a while, but what's churning right now. What can you trust right now? What is still kind of basal there? And then finally, I want to get into some tactical solutions, because even though there is a lot of ambiguity and churn and things like that in the standards landscape, there are some good tactical solutions and tactical decisions that you can make right now using off-the-shelf hardware, off-the-shelf software that'll give you the ability to do federated web services transactions now and line yourself up to the current standards landscape so that you're insulated from any kind of changes within the standard landscape, but at the same time you have a very, very clear and sophisticated upgrade path as the standards start to work out. And that, in fact, is really the theme of this talk. If you look at federation, there are about a million different models you could create. And in fact, a lot of the time the standards, unfortunately, tend to be confusing simply because they look at so many different variations of this. It turns out, though, if you actually talk to customers who are doing real web services now, a lot of what they're doing is actually fairly simple, and that's a good thing, because simple can be secured very easily. And so what we think at Layer 7 is that there are some very pragmatic solutions available right now, that you can line yourself up with, that give you most of the benefits of federation and put you in a very good position so that as more sophisticated message exchange patterns begin to evolve, Okay. This is where I got to, I think, when we found out that nobody could hear me. So some of you may have seen this this slide already. Let's talk about identity and identity and distributed computing. As I mentioned earlier, this is something we're all intimately familiar with. We probably all did sign on this morning to our computer systems, and we probably validated against some kind of central identity repository. There's about a million different ways of authenticating, proving you are who you say you are. And they can really be broken up into two different classifications. Some are just based on what you know, like a username and a password. So some of them have sophisticated validation mechanisms, like digest methodologies, which are used in everywhere from web browsers using, let's say, the W3C standards for digest authentication to Microsoft and PLM mechanisms. The basic idea being, of course, that you shouldn't ever really transmit a password over a channel, even if it's encrypted. A number of these mechanisms, as I said, are based on things you know. A number of other ones, though, are based on not just things you know, but also things you have, something physical. And that might be a biometric thing, or it might be something physical like key fob. RSA is extremely successful with secure ID fob, and there are a number of other similar ones out there. Certificates and PKI can sort of fit in between there. Very often, certificates and key pairs and things like that end up on physical devices, like again, key fobs or smart cards or something like that. As a secure means of storage that you carry around with you. But by and large, these things haven't changed much in 10 years. As for authentication authorization technology, of course, it does. We've all used LDAP directories. A lot of us probably use vendor-specific directories, things like Microsoft Access Directory. ADS is very popular with our systems. Going back to the mainframe days, where a lot of us started, IBM's RACF, of course, is extremely popular. For authorization, there's the good old-fashioned ACCO, the Access Control List, which funds manifestation in a number of different And then finally, there's a lot of proprietary solutions everywhere, from IBM's Privileged Access Manager, Integrity SiteMinder, RSA's ClearTrust, et cetera, et cetera. So the diagram here really is really meant to show you what the standard distributed computing paradigm is. So down there on the kind of bottom left, I've got a bunch of different identities. Alex, Scott, and Francis, and we get on to some kind of terminal or whatever, and cross an intranet or an internet, doesn't really matter, and somehow get into some kind of resource. And that resource is, well, it could be anything. It could be an email server. It could be a web server. I mean, it could be a legacy HR system that was built back in the 90s. Conceptually, a lot of the stuff is the same. What's important, though, is this idea that the physical identities reside, out there kind of connected to the terminal, if you will, and somehow provide credentials. And those credentials are validated, by the actual server, by the resource, into some kind of directory server. And of course, the directory servers can be any one of those ones that I've listed down on the bottom right there. So this is something we're very used to. It's a very, very common paradigm. So what's federation then? Federation is an extension of this, really, where you start to not just have that single central identity repository. And in fact, you probably have lots of identity repositories. And this is something that, even if we work for a small organization, we're acutely familiar with. Look at the problem of passwords. All of us have too many passwords. I mean, we're not supposed to, but of course, we end up writing down passwords on pieces of paper all the time just to keep track of them or putting return calls. Usually these are, usernames into web systems that aren't that big a deal, but it's still a tremendous security risk because we have these identities which ostensibly, are mirrors of the same, physical entity. In other words, if I, all of these are my, Scott Morrison, that is my identity, but they reside in different forms and all sorts of different locations, different islands, if you will. And this becomes a really acute problem in large organizations, where suddenly you get these different identities, residing in different legacy servers all across the organization. And you need some way of uniting those. Another common problem is between two trading partners. And this is what the diagram really shows. It's sort of a hypothetical diagram of two different organizations. One I'm calling blue, which is over there in the upper right, and the other one is down there in the lower left, which is what I call organization green. And hopefully the colors show up okay on your monitor. What's important, though, is that these are separate organizations. They don't necessarily have to be separate companies. They could be just different business units, different departments within one company. What's important, though, is that they have different security domains. So in other words, Organization Green sort of rules the security domain that Michelle, Dimitri, and Program X are in. And when you think about that, Program X is something I haven't introduced yet, but application identity is a very important thing to consider. This whole idea of identity may not just be a person, it may be a program, it may be some kind of application, it may be some kind of automated agent. And these are the new kinds of identities that, particularly in the web services world, that we're having to face all of the time. Now, in contrast, over there in the blue zone, where we've actually got a resource, that blue server that we want to access, the directory server there really only knows about Alex.Scott and Grant Live. So my problem is if I want Michelle or Dimitri or Program X to get access to that blue server, what do I do? How do I get that concept of those identities into the blue zone there? And that's the Federation problem, is that, you know, identities tend to be sort of centralized in these repositories which don't share well. Okay, they, in a sense, they're, when they went through kindergarten, they're, you know, I guess they had problems with sharing or something, that the teacher says. Does not play well with other kids. That's the case in directories. That's the case in identities today. These things do not play well. And in fact, if we look at the history of directory synchronization and meta directories and things like that, frankly, we see wreckage all over the place. What hasn't worked in the past? Directory synchronization hasn't worked in the past. All the CIOs and the family are getting this tremendous sinking feeling. And I don't mean, you know, S-Y-N-C-H. I mean S-I-N-K when they think about directory syncing, because the problem with bringing two directories together is one of logistics more than technology. It's easy to sort of set up a one-time synchronization where you, you know, punch through firewalls and you know, set up some kind of private link between directories. But the real problem is more a logistical one. The records always get out of sync. And the problem is that the records tend to drift a lot. So that, like, let's say over there on the green zone, Dimitri gets fired one day from his job and replaced by Program X. That'll probably get updated by the HR people, you know, in the green directory server really fast. But that information could take days to propagate down to the blue directory server, you know, just because of the way the propagation has been set up. Remember, these organizations could be, I mean, these could be two different organizations, you know, separated geographically by oceans or something like that. Logistically, it just doesn't work too well. You know, and not only that, using credentials across different directories. I mean, the green system might have a username and password for Dimitri in there. It doesn't really make good security sense to then, you know, move that across the network so that there's another copy of that over on Blue's directory server. So the classic problem here has been that Dimitri gets fired, and Dimitri finds he can still sign on to the Blue directory server for another 2 weeks or something before that change in status actually gets propagated. Online synchronization, of course, has been even tougher, and that's really because of the problems of making directories open and available across networks. I mean, we have to punch through firewall mazes and things like that. And while conceptually it seems to make sense and is easy to draw on a whiteboard, logistically, when rubber hits the road and you actually have to deploy these things in a real network operations center, you're going to find heaps of trouble with firewalls and, you know, crossing subnets and everything like that. So in the past, this hasn't been very, very effective. So as an alternative, what we really need to do is sort of look at this problem a little differently and do, you know, what's sort of a popular thought exercise in computing these days, which is the idea of a separation of concerns, where we actually, you know, sort of identify what the operations are that we need to do and centralize those into the most logical place to do that. So take authentication, for instance, the process of validating some kind of credential. It makes the most sense to do that in one place for the people over in the green zone, for instance, and that's on Green's directory server. So, in other words, if Michelle, Dimitri, and Program X have to, you know, prove who they are, you know, by validating a credential, they should do that with the Green directory server. They shouldn't try to do that by you know, going over to the Blue directory server. Authorization is different, though. Authorization is kind of interesting because authorization follows directly from an act of authentication. authorization. I mean, authorization is meaningless unless there's been some kind of validation of credentials. So really, it's a second step. And it can happen anywhere. I mean, authorization could logically stay over there in the blue zone, because authorization, remember, is the association of an identity with a resource. So it's something like saying, Dimitri is allowed to access the get quote web server, where he actually does he talks to a brokerage system and gets quotes for stocks or whatever, between, say, 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock. Okay, that's a sort of an authorization step. So it's predicated on knowing that Dimitri is who he says he is. So authorization can actually be done over on the blue side there, which makes a lot of sense, because the blue side knows a lot about the resource. They own that resource, so maybe they should be the ones that own the authorization rules. But you could also make an argument that authorization should reside over in the green directory server, too. So in other words, green somehow imports a list of different resources that exist over there to make statements, make associations with its identities there. So this whole idea of separation of authentication and authorization, in a lot of ways, is fundamental to the pragmatic approach to doing federation effectively. Okay. Now, the way to make all this happen, of course, is to set up a trust relationship. And by trust relationship, I mean there's a delegation of trust between, in this case, the blue zone to the green zone. So, in other words, the resource or the service in the blue zone is saying, I'm going to trust that those guys in the green zone authenticate correctly. Okay. And I'm going to trust if I can get some kind of proof of authentication, if I can get some kind of proof that the green directory server has validated that Dimitri is who he says he is, then that's good enough for me. I'm going to let that person in. And that's kind of neat, because when you think about that, that means that the blue zone doesn't really have to know about individuals. It might help to know about groups or something like that, but it doesn't need to know about, who's been hired, who's been fired in the green zone. All it has to do is say, I trust that green knows how to take care of itself, because, we've worked that out, and they're a business partner of us, or they're our branch office or something like that. I trust that if they can, if they made a decision and they stand by it, that's good enough for me, and I'll let that person in. That's another fundamental concept in federation, this idea of trust and trust relationships, and one of the great challenges of this, of course, is how you articulate that and how dynamic it is. Is trust set up on the fly? Does it change? Does it move around? Et cetera, et cetera. So our core requirements really are this idea: we need some way of building these trust relationships, of effectively articulating them, and security context between systems. So in other words, if Dimitri or Michelle goes and authenticates against their local directory server, the downstream blue server needs some kind of evidence for that. It's not enough just to claim you're Dimitri. You have to sort of show that you've authenticated in your own directory server. And that gets into some very, very interesting ideas behind security tokens and security token services, which we'll touch on in a few moments. There's also privacy issues here. Now think about this. What if over there Dimitri wants to sign on to this local system, this local directory system, and wants to use some kind of resource over in the blue zone, but wants to do it anonymously? That's a legitimate kind of use case, really. Another one might be that what if there's certain kinds of attributes associated with that identity, like email address, which Dimitri doesn't mind sharing his identity with the server, but he doesn't want to necessarily share his email address with any resource that's outside of his own green zone. And that makes a lot of sense, because Dimitri may not want to get all sorts of spam in that based on allowing his email address to propagate out beyond his own security zone. Having privacy that can be set at a very, very fine-grained level. In other words, privacy and confidentiality associated with attributes and qualities of an identity is a very, very important part of the whole idea of federation. Having a way of managing that effectively is really crucial. And then finally, there's the whole idea of sessions. Sessions are a funny thing in distributed computing, because often they're there and not well articulated or understood. Like, look at the web, for instance. I mean, the web HTTP, for instance, is a fundamentally session-less protocol. And we do backflips and have gone to great lengths to be able to build session-oriented application protocols on top of that by using all sorts of clever tricks like cookies and URL rewriting and hidden fields and all sorts of things like that. You know, because really we don't have a session context that we can rely on, let's say, based on an open socket or something like that. Web services is exactly the same. It's got this idea of every single, you know, message, every single transaction has to sort of stand on its own. And so at an application protocol level, we have to have a way of tying it together into some kind of cohesive whole. And so if we do that, the minute we bring that kind of thing in, that concept of a session, of let's say a session that's bound back to an active authentication, we have to have a way of turning it off. You know, because otherwise we've got the problem of, well, you know, I might sign on to a system and use it for a few minutes and then walk away and my client-side application, you know, go to the bathroom or something like that, and somebody may come over and try to, you know, keep reusing that, in my cubicle. That's a problem. So we need a way of timing out sessions, explicitly logging off and that. And that's why I'm, you know, web and things like that, you've always got this log out, you know, links that you can go to explicitly expire a session. And of course they time up as well, just in case you forget. I know I do a lot. So what are standards doing to help us here? Fortunately, they are doing a few things. There's really two different major standards efforts going on right now. The first one that a lot of people have heard of and you know, can be considered the grandfather in this area, really, is the Liberty Alliance. And it's a consortium of over 150 different companies that realized this was going to be a problem early on and got together to come up with solutions, you know, to approach this. And Liberty, at its best, doesn't want to try to invent a lot of new technology. It wants to instead leverage technology or things like SAML, which is, you know, an OASIS standard now. Liberty wants to make use of that, extend it where necessary, as a mechanism of doing single sign-on and transferring security context. It also makes use of you know, good old SSL/TLS for you know, reliability, confidentiality, and integrity. And it also makes use in the web services world of the WSS, the web services security specification out of OASIS. It's added, you know, other additional technologies here and there where they're needed. But by and large, Liberty has been very successful in the web browser world and has recently been starting to move into you know, sort of more active clients, more web service-oriented clients, where you might have a fixed client making a call to some kind of remote web service. Now, in contrast, WS Federation has really come out of work that's been done by IBM, Microsoft, or say, Verisign. And WS Federation is an attempt to build up on specs that are coming out of OASIS. So, you know, a lot of the same technologies like SAML and WSS. You know, it also defers at times to SSL and TLS. But it also makes use of a number of other WS star standards. One of which is WS Trust. Another one is WS Policy, which has recently been moved into W3C, interestingly enough. Another one is WS Metadata Exchange. So it's making use of a lot of these, and it's a very technological solution, okay? And it is still emerging. It's something that the core technologies have been described, but it's still, things are moving a lot there. But at the same time, it's very exciting. And one of the things that makes it so exciting is that not only does it do browser clients, obviously, what they call the passive requesters, but it actually spends a lot of time looking at active requesters or you know, could be you know, could be fixed browser clients. It could be a mainframe doing a request. Doesn't really matter. And in particular, it extends the whole model of WSS around security tokens. So where Liberty is very SAML based, Liberty has this idea of a single security token, which is SAML. WSS in OASIS has the idea of a whole framework that can fit any number of different tokens, some of which haven't even been identified with yet. SAML is obviously one of them. Kerberos is another, certificate theory, yet another. There's a one called RHEL, which is an evolution of XRML, promoted by Content Guard, among others. These are all different kinds of security tokens that can be made available and used to transfer security context. So one of the neat things about WS Federation is it's very flexible in terms of different kinds of tokens that can be used. It doesn't try to mandate one token over the other, but instead creates the hook such that various different tokens can be employed. So both of these technologies can be used in the web services environment. And in particular, both can also be used in the browser environment. And what the distinction I want to make right now is what's different between them. Like, why am I making a statement like Web Services Federation is a lot harder than Browser Federation? You know, which I'm sure a lot of people are sort of latching on because they're having enough problems just getting Web Browser Federation going. Well, let's take a quick look at the landscape of these two. This diagram sort of attempts to show some of the differences between like a pure web browser kind of interaction as opposed to a web server or a web services interaction. So in the upper left there is a web browser interaction. We're all very familiar. You sit down there, you're using HTTP to get access to a web server, and both AML, Liberty, and in fact WS Federation have actually done some very good work in doing single sign-on solutions and federation solutions, which leverage the capabilities of browsers and leverage the capabilities of technologies like HTTP to actually allow security content to be transferred amongst different systems. And they do a lot of types of things like, using HTTP redirects and using cookies if you're within one DNS domain, of course, or rural query parameters and things like that, all to essentially allow systems to authenticate on one security token to the service or identity provider service, and then transfer that evidence of that security context down to a web server, which can then validate it and say, okay, that's okay, I'll accept that. One of the important things to realize, though, is that its entire privacy model, its entire model that protects the integrity of the token, really depends on SSL. So in other words, if you turn SSL off, for instance, then tokens are hijacked. So in other words, if I'm a web browser client and I authenticate against the directory server, but it issues me a token back, okay, like a SAML token, and I don't have SSL turned on in the browser state, you know, somebody can intercept that token in midstream and then use that token to pretend they're me to get access to backend services. So that's a problem really unique. If you're going to do this effectively, you need the integrity of the entire SSL system to be set up effectively. In contrast, web services is a little different. Web services, you can certainly do that. And using SSL as a means of privacy and reliability and integrity is a good thing to do. But it's not the only mechanism. Web services also has this idea of absorbing security into the message itself, so that even if you've got a multi-hop transaction, the security context remains in the message. So in other words, you encrypt or you sign the relevant parts of the message, not the channel itself. That's very powerful, but it's also very complicated, because it means that a message may be, by and large, unencrypted, and that if you've got a security token, you've somehow got to associate that security token with the message itself. And it turns out there's a really neat mechanism for doing this, and this next slide shows you sort of very, very briefly, and I won't go into the details of this other than I'll give you a reference that you can look at later if you want to get into this, of how you can bind SAML tokens that are pushed into a web services scope message, how you can bind those into the message such that the message as a whole can't be forged. Okay, so in other words, even if I'm, let's say, a hacker and I intercept one of these messages flying over the network, I can't pull that token out and reuse it in a different message. And it uses a mechanism of binding keys into the security token itself and then proving ownership of the keys using digital signatures across not just that token, but the rest of the message itself. And this slide actually lists from an article that I did for WebSphere Developers Journal, which if you guys go to WebSphere Developers Journal, it's online, so people can pull it down. It might be, if you're interested in this, it's actually really, it's a very clever and interesting idea that the standards consortium has come up with. And we at Layer 7 are actually using this in a number of different locations. So, suffice to say, the point I want to leave you with on this is that yes, Web Browser Federation is a difficult problem. and web browser SSO can look at SSO as being a, Federation being an extension of SSO to different identity islands. Okay, so these are tough, but web services is a lot tougher. And part of the reason is you got to take a lot of responsibility on yourself to do this on the, this kind of stuff on the client. Like web browser federation really it pushed browsers. It leveraged technology that was in browsers. Web services, in contrast, doesn't have that right now. Web services forces programmers on the client side or the requester side to do an awful lot of orchestration of going out and getting tokens, finding what tokens are needed somehow, binding those tokens into messages using, you know, XML security models like XML encryption, tokenization, and things like that. And, you know, that's a lot of work. That's actually not an easy thing to do. So this is a problem. This is a tremendous amount of work that's being pushed on the programmers that causes some real problems. So what do we do about it? Well, here's what we should do about it. We should approach this tactically. In the future, of course, you know, lots of vendors will come out with solutions that support the emerging standards, like Liberty, like WS Federation. And that's all well and good. You know, we at Layer 7 believe in that too, and we're doing our best to support these standards as they start to emerge. But tactically, if you start to look at the problem, and specifically in the web services environment, there are a couple of things you can do. If you can get some kind of federated token service, okay, and that's what, if you look in the green zone in the lower left, that's that little box that I put in front of Green's directory service. What that box does is that it sort of fronts some kind of directory, okay? So it ends up being a piece of technology acts as a point of authentication, a point of credential validation, okay? So it knows how to speak web services protocols and such so that a client can provide authentication credentials to it. And it can issue specialized security tokens, like SAML tokens, that actually bind identities specifically, you know, bind that person's identity into a statement that says, yes, Dimitri signed on the Green Directory server at 12 noon. And this authentication statement that I'm making is authoritative because I signed it and it's good for 15 minutes. Okay? So it issues this security token, which in a way you can think of it as like a temporary certificate. You know, like from a conceptual point of view, it's very, very similar to a certificate. And it's an authoritative statement, but it's very temporary. It has very specific statements about identity, when somebody signed on, perhaps what groups they're in, what resources they're allowed to get at. It makes these very authoritative statements, and then issues that back to the caller. So that's, you know, the client program that Dimitri is using or Michelle is using, program X is using. That token is then taken by that client program and then bound into a message that goes down to the resource down in the blue zone. And that resource could be a cloak server or an HR database or whatever. It's some kind of web services server. Some kind of web service is being published and made available to people in the green zone. So the green, so the blue zone doesn't know anything about these identities. Like, it doesn't necessarily know who Michelle is or Dimitri or Program S is. It really only knows about, you know, people who, that tokens that seem to come from the green zone are authoritative, okay? And so to do that effectively, we need some more infrastructure. And that's what resides up there in front of the server. That's that Federation policy enforcement point, okay? And that's in the blue zone in the upper right. And so what we need there is some infrastructure that takes those tokens and knows how to validate those tokens, knows how to say, okay, this is a good token as opposed to, oh, this has been forged by some hacker somewhere. Okay, so it needs to be able to look at a token, make sure that it's bound effectively to the message that's being sent. So in other words, the message isn't a forgery, the token isn't a forgery, the token hasn't expired, you know, the token comes from somebody you trust, all this kind of stuff. This is all a lot of work, but it's all very deterministic. In other words, it's something that can be set up declaratively, you know, by an administrator, such that it you know, it's a bunch of steps that are done every time for all transactions. So it sounds like kind of a tall order, because one of the issues here is that, yes, I've drawn two fancy little pieces of technology that seem to front both web services and front both directory servers, but it's also pushing a lot of burden out onto the client program. So remember, somebody, you know, we're not talking browsers here, we're talking web services clients. Okay, so that's like some kind of computer code that somebody's written out there in the green zone. And you know, it could be just a requester for, you know, a quote, or it could be a system that inserts new records into an HR database. It could be any web services. It isn't about a domain. It's about, you know, it's about infrastructure so that you can do integration between systems. So somebody's written that code, and unfortunately, you know, that poor programmer has had to take on a lot of burden of figuring out how to get that token, figuring out how to do all of this fancy XML security binding between tokens and burdens. And this, in fact, is one of the fundamental issues that comes up again and again in web services implementations, is how much effort gets pushed down onto the client-side program. Now, we at Layer 7 sort of have identified that early on and see that as a bit of a problem. And so the next slide sort of shows you our vision of what this thing should look like. And in particular, replaces those abstract blocks before with actual pieces of code, like 2 weeks. At Layer 7, we got into this business building security gateway for XML. Okay, so what a security gateway for XML does is it's kind of like a firewall that operates at a higher level. It knows about application protocols, and in particular, it knows about scope protocols, and it knows how to go through messages and make decisions about should this message be, you know, sent down to a service or not, you know, based on identity information that's found in that message, based on time of day, based on where it's coming from, all sorts of things. We are a company that builds XML firewalls that do exactly that. But one of the things we identified early on is that if you build an XML firewall, you've got this problem of building a new view of an API. So in other words, what you've done is you've taken a standard web services API and you've added all the security expectation, security policy on top of it. You know, you're saying things like encrypt the body of the message and sign the timestamp and prove who you are using these key pairs, and et cetera, et cetera. But there's not a good way of articulating that out to a client application. So usually what happens is this stuff gets, you know, written down on a whiteboard, written up in a document somewhere, and then some poor client programmer sits down and actually tries to do this by hand. That's not a lot of work. So to deal with that, we actually built some agent technology, helper application. The whole idea behind the agent technology is that it intercepts web services calls before they go out in the wire and identifies them early on, goes to a gateway and says, I've got a request here for, let's say, get quote or add new user to HR database. What are your security expectations for that? Gets a reply from the gateway, and the gateway does what we call a decoration step. So it securely transforms the message into a secure version of the message that is what the gateway expects. And then it sends it out over the wire. So the benefit of that is that suddenly security becomes laid down. It becomes something that's declarative that you can change completely on the fly as you go along. And if you want to make a change, let's say, to an encryption policy, like let's say you've been using triple guess to encrypt your message body, and you negotiate a symmetric encryption key that's good for, I don't know, 20 minutes or something like that. That's a realistic policy, but you may want to move to something like the Rheingau algorithm, AES, the new government standard. If you had to do that today, you'd end up opening code. Let's face it. You'd end up going in there, you'd start tweaking things, you'd make changes to code, you'd relint, you'd retest, and you'd have a new development cycle on your hands. In our case, what we do is we make that completely administratable. I'm not sure if that's a real word. That's something that an administrator does in policy. Okay, so you get onto a console, you make that change, you know, by dragging and dropping and doing a few clicks into our security gateway, and that information is made available to agent. And so the agent, the next time it gets one of those requests, will immediately download that new policy and transform against the new encryption object. So the beauty of that is that if you've got a whole bunch of clients out there, you don't have to change anything. You don't open up a single client. that you've made a radical change to your security model. You're using a much more efficient steering function algorithm. And that's the power of declarative security. Now, how this all fits into federation is that if you have all those pieces, if you have this gateway and this agent, the agent can then take responsibility for doing all of this security orchestration. And in fact, the gateway can also act as a token service. So a gateway can reside both in the blue zone and then over there in the green zone as well. And the green zone is simply acting as a token service. So what happens is a message goes out onto the wire, gets intercepted by the agent. The agent, you know, let's say it's destined for the, you know, service in the blue zone up there. The agent says, okay, I've got a request for get close. I go talk to the secure span gateway in the blue zone there. The gateway says, okay, if you want to access this service, here are my expectations. And it gives it to the agent in a document called a WS policy document, which is, you know, one of these new emerging web service standards. Part of the policy is where to go to get a security token. And so the agent will then dutifully follow that request and actually go out to its local security server, its local gateway, and say, okay, I'm acting on behalf of user Dimitri. Here are his credentials. Please authenticate and issue me a token that I can then take and use to get into the blue zone. And our gateway over there in the green zone knows how to do that. It issues the token, it validates credentials against the existing directory server, and that directory server can be, you know, an LDAP system, it can be Active Directory, it could be one of our partner systems, like IBM's Civil Access Manager. It sends back one of those tokens. The agent does all the heavy lifting then of taking that token and binding it into a secure web services message. So it does all of the cross-certification, like cross-signatures and everything like that, which is a tremendous burden and that on that programmer. It does it for them automatically, and it sends that whole secure message down through the gateway in the blue zone. The gateway in the blue zone, of course, will go through a whole validation scheme according to its policy. It doesn't trust anything. It goes through and loads its policy for absolutely every message going in there, and make sure that message is okay and allowed to actually get down to that server. So what we've done here is giving you the turnkey solution. All of these pieces work together, completely standards-based, lined up against emerging WS Federation technology. So it's using things like WS Trust, it's using WS Metadata Exchange, et cetera, it's using SAML. Okay? So it's making use of these technologies, but at the same time completely insulating you from them. So if major changes happen, you know, that's our problem, it's not your problem. We hide you from all of that. So you, as a software developer or as a manager, you just worry about making sure that your applications do plain vanilla silk call. You don't worry about all this orchestration or authentication and that. We take care of that for you. We do all of that heavy lifting. Now, where we're going with this, of course, is right now I'm showing you the all secure spam gateway solution. But, of course, other organizations are also coming up with security token servers, people like RSA, people like IBM. We will, you know, as these technologies start to emerge, make sure that our agents can authenticate against those as well. So that, you know, as more and more federation technology for web services starts to emerge, the agent becomes the point of orchestration that does all of that difficult handling of tokens, hashing tokens, and inserting tokens for you automatically on the fly. So with that, what I'm going to do is just conclude very quickly because we're running out of time. So let me leave you with these thoughts. Basically, federation and web services is not an easy thing to do. It's quite a bit harder than in the browser world. And I know that's not the news that a lot of people want to hear because in the browser world, it is difficult enough. But right now, there are solutions coming out there. And in particular, here at Layer 7, our secure span solution with our federation technology will essentially allow you to do this today out of the box. So with that, if anybody wants to do follow-ups, my contact information is here. This actually is real stuff. This gets right to my desk. But I do like talking about technology to people, so don't hesitate to contact me if you have further questions. I do have a couple questions from the floor. I think I've got time to answer one really quickly, and then what I'm going to do is we're going to do a very quick draw of the iPod, because I know that's something that a lot of people are interested in. I wish I could have one, actually. It's a great piece of technology. Okay, so I've got a question right here. Now, David Noble from Coastal Health actually asked, does the list of authentication technologies here represent the leading authentication strategy, in my opinion? And I would say yes. I mean, part of our strategy in this from the beginning is to, one, abstract away the concept of authentication and authorization so that our technology isn't about, you know, necessarily being an identity provider. Because frankly, you've got one already. You've got LDAP, you've got Active Directory, you've got Secure ID, you've got one of these things. We will, if you don't have one, act as one, of course. But in most cases, we spend a lot of time trying to abstract that away and provide a pluggable provider so that we can interface with all of these existing systems. So you already have a tremendous investment in directory systems and identity management systems. We will interface with that. We will extend those systems out into the realm of web services and do the heavy lifting into web services. And yes, the ones I've listed, by and large, seem to be what we come across all the time. And the technologies that we use specifically to pull it all together, Federation, Metadata Exchange, Secure Conversation, WS Security, SAML, these are the technologies that are being used and that are becoming dominant out there. Liberty as well. Our intention here at Layer 7 is we are exploring Liberty with companies like PingID now. It's something we're very interested in, and all I can say is stay tuned. With that, what I'm going to